Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages. Thank you very much for tuning in once again. This is your daily dose of deprogramming, and my name is JD. We are live, like we are every Monday through Friday from 10 until noon Central Standard Time. And this is, of course, the Red Pill Report's radio broadcast for the 25th day of November. It is Tuesday. We made it through Monday. And you know what I love about Tuesdays? Is that it's not Monday. That's pretty much all there is to it and about all you can really say in Tuesday's favor, but not Monday. So got to give that a little bit of props to Tuesday for that. Oh, man, what a big week we are into right now. I'm not sure if you tuned in yesterday. For those of you who did, thank you very much. We had an amazing discussion with Jamie Hanshaw yesterday about Monarch programming and its prevalence in pop culture. I highly recommend, if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show, to go back and listen to the archives from yesterday. And the rest of the week is not going to be a letdown in any way at all either. Today's guest is going to be Alfred Adask. Many people may be familiar with Al because of his background in a very unique subject of law. He probably is one of the very first people on the planet, or certainly one of the only ones in the last 100 years that came across the phrase man or other animals in some legal precedents that he was investigating, and realized that that concept of man and other animals has some pretty significant importance in terms of the spiritual battle that we're fighting. And he really likens the legal system to that arena of our spiritual battle. So we'll be talking to him about why it is so important for the government to recognize us as animals, and what some of the ramifications of that decision are, and how we can fight it. So Alfred Adask will be joining us at the 11 o'clock hour. Tomorrow, Cherie and Chris Geo are going to be on the show. We're going to be talking about Truth Frequency Radio in general, and kind of how it came about and what the plans are for the future. And again, want to give thanks to both of them for agreeing to come onto the show, and a super big thanks to Chris for allowing the Red Pill Report radio broadcast to appear on Truth Frequency Radio. Please, please go and support the network and support the other hosts at the network. We will all appreciate it very, very much. It's how we keep this big ball of truth rolling down the hill, as it were. And also, Thanksgiving is going to be no shortage of a big show either. Greg Morse will be joining us for an extended interview on that day, and we'll be talking about the mortgage crisis. And I think it's an important conversation to be having this week. I want to direct everybody again, if you go to redpillreports.com, the featured report regarding the mortgage crisis is listed right at the very top of the page. You don't have to go into the news or anything. You just go right to redpillreports.com. The top link on the page is a very important article about how your mortgage could have been compromised, and also another article which will help you identify if your mortgage has been compromised. And, you know, with everybody gathering around the Thanksgiving table this weekend, probably a really good time to print out a bunch of these articles and take them to your friends, your family, coworkers, things like that, so people can spend some of that downtime that they've got this weekend investigating their own mortgages and learning about this, because you may very well have friends and family out there, guys, that are going to pay, you know, for 30 years and still not own their home. And that is a crisis, and that's something that we're going to be talking with Greg Morse about on Thanksgiving. Just as a side reminder, again, obviously we're going to be live that day, so a big thank you to all of you who choose to spend your mornings with us. And a big thank you to all of you who will choose to spend Thanksgiving with us. Boulevard and I will be here guarding. I'll be guarding the turkey from him because he's very shifty. He's not a cat that can be trusted, unfortunately. So I will have my hands full that morning, and hope all of you will tune in and join us that day. I think it's going to be a fantastic week, and then I'll let you guys in on it too. Friday, Michael Rosecliffe's going to be back on the amount of information this guy has because of his Looking Glass program. Substantial, probably be a very entertaining hour on Friday, which is what we like to do on Friday, is try and keep the fun meter pegged if we can. Speaking of pegged fun meters, my goodness. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, one of the co-creators, Rob, does such a fantastic job getting the website up and up to snuff every single day. And one of his many duties is to post all of the news that I try and go through during the first hour so that you can go to it at redpillreports.com and go to the show section. You'll find all the news that we're going to go over. You can follow along. Obviously, I can't get into the depth on some of these articles that I would like to, but you can go and you can follow along. And if you have comments, you can certainly hit the contact tab at Red Pill Reports and send us an email. I got another email from my good friend Susan in South Korea yesterday. We are international, ladies and gentlemen, and I can't tell you how thankful I am for all of you, not just here in our country that are joining us every day, but for my friends that are now joining us from overseas. Very, very cool to see this Red Pill Reports forum grow for all of us, and man, I'm just so excited to be a part of it all. We have the best listeners in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Probably the most important headline that happened yesterday, clearly, Ferguson, Missouri, erupted in turmoil last night because it was announced that there was not going to be an indictment of Officer Darren Wilson. So, let's see here. No indictment of Darren Wilson announced last night, 8 o'clock. Very interesting that they decided to keep the information private until then. Also very interesting that they announced it on a Monday night. There were a lot of schools that were closed in the St. Louis area, but really, essentially, the most damage happened in Ferguson last night. And I, like my friends Rob and Jeff, we were glued to our computers last night after the announcement happened, watching some terrific live streams. A lot of guys going way above and beyond the call of alternative media, putting themselves in harm's way. And some of the footage that came out of Ferguson last night was just unbelievable. You would think, honestly, that the law enforcement teams there had stock in tear gas, because I've never seen so much tear gas. I mean, it looked like downtown Beirut to me. It was a classic kettling operation where a limited amount of protesters were basically blocked on a street with only two exits, police on both ends. The police obviously were telling these people to disperse, but cutting off their exit routes. And then the tear gas started, and I'm talking probably, I witnessed between 9 o'clock and about 11 o'clock, at least 10 different volleys of multiple canisters of tear gas, and not just being shot at the protesters, but being shot laterally down side streets. There were several fires that were started. Some of the fires were started by the tear gas canisters as they went into people's property and yards, but there were also several police cars. I believe two of them were burnt, squad cars burnt to the ground last night. Dozens of other cars vandalized and charred, as well as an entire dealership lot was vandalized in St. Louis County last night. Police said they made more than 80 arrests just around the Ferguson area, but there were only minor injuries. And shortly after the St. Louis County prosecutor, McCullough, made the rambling nighttime announcement, Officer Wilson's grand jury testimony was released. And that's one of the things that people are geared up on right now, is the fact that all of the information that the grand jury deliberated about is now going to be made public today. So you'll see slews and slews of information coming out, talking about the validity of the information that was given to the grand jury. But, you know, the bottom line is that now, apparently it's open season on unarmed suspects in Missouri. If you are a threat to an officer, they can shoot you and get away with it. And I believe that that is the new precedent that has been set, and that was echoed in the minds and the words of the protesters last night in Ferguson. One of the things that Officer Wilson said during his testimony, which was just released yesterday, was that he claimed that Michael Brown looked like a demon during the deadly confrontation and actually likened him to Hulk Hogan, which I find to be really unusual. He goes on to say, I mean, it was obvious that he was bigger and stronger than me. And he says, I've already taken two hits to the face, and I didn't think that he would. He says, a third one would be fatal if he hit me right. And he says, or at least I would be unconscious, and then who knows what would happen to me after that. And of course, this is Darren Wilson during his testimony to the grand jury. What a weenie, I guess, is the first thing that comes to my mind. I'm so disappointed in law enforcement officers that are just absolute cowards. And I hearken back to the year that I spent in the UK when I was studying music in school. And I remember the police officers there being exceptionally big human beings, very, very large, like the kind you would imagine that would play rugby. But you know what? They were all exceptionally polite. They were all exceptionally well-spoken, and they were all unarmed. And I'll tell you what, those guys don't show fear. They don't. If you come up to a UK police officer and start running your mouth, they will rock your taco, buddy, and they will do it with a stick, and they will do it, and you will never even see it coming. But that's the difference. There's law enforcement officers out there who are too afraid to do their jobs, and they fall back on lethal force, and that's, I think, what we're seeing here. So anyway, that's enough of an editorial about that, but I find it interesting that Officer Wilson would liken Michael Brown, who again was 17 years old, to Hulk Hogan, and talking about why he was so afraid for his life, although it just drives me crazy because he was still in his car after he took the two hits to the face and then decided to exit the vehicle, pursue Mr. Brown on foot, and then empty his clip into him. But anyway, not the only place that happened to erupt last night was Ferguson. New York saw quite a few protests, people streaming into Times Square, and actually somebody sprayed fake blood on the NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton. There's a great picture of that on Twitter from NY Scanner. I applaud that effort. I'm just going to say that right now. Also, in that city, protesters shut down at least three major bridges while decrying other police-involved shooting. Politicians and community leaders and changemakers alike pleaded for peace, but the fury had already spread across the United States. In Seattle, protesters threw rocks at cars and eventually shut down the I-5 corridor. Others linked arms at 12th and Pike. In Oakland, California, vandals lit fires in trash cans, spray-painted anti-police slogans on buildings, and blocked a major freeway. In Los Angeles, protesters took the street and one tried to take control of the freeway. In downtown Los Angeles, the police used foam projectiles and rubber bullets to disperse the crowds there. Again, Ferguson is definitely the place where the most damage took place. So we will keep an eye on what is going on in Ferguson right now. With that, I think that we know that there were, 82 or 83 cities, 82 American cities and an 83rd being a Canadian city that were scheduling major protests today. And I think that now that this has happened, that the indictment will not go forward, we'll probably see a lot more unrest. And I think that now that the lights are on in Ferguson, it should be an interesting day and probably an interesting evening as well. So my heart goes out to all the people there that are trying to do the right thing and are getting swept up in violence. One of the things that I definitely noticed while watching the videos, the live streams last night, you know, the one that we ended up landing on, I wish I'd gotten the name of. I'll try and include it in tomorrow's news for you guys because I imagine he'll be back up today. But at one point, he had 90,000 people watching his stream. And that is so encouraging to think that almost 100,000 people are getting actual information direct from a source on site. Because now if the police come back and say, oh, we didn't use tear gas, it's like, well, that ain't true. And that's the bottom line. So I'm really, really proud of the gentleman who was out there last night. Again, I wish I had his name. Maybe somebody can Skype it to me and I'll get back around to it. But well-deserved round of applause for that gentleman putting himself in harm's way last night as Ferguson pretty much erupted just like we thought it would. Actually, you know, in honesty, it wasn't as bad as I had thought that it was going to be. And I guess we'll have to see what is going to happen in the future. Sticking with some national news, obviously Ferguson being the biggest thing, but a Saudi national was detained yesterday at Fort Sam Houston while explosives were found in his vehicle. And this is, of course, coming out of San Antonio, Texas. Officials at Fort Sam Houston say they have taken into custody the driver of a vehicle that military officials say contained explosive materials and which sparked a lockdown at the San Antonio Army base yesterday. The Bexar County Sheriff's Department said on Twitter that the lockdown was being handled by military police and the Sheriff's Department had no units assigned to the case. Alex Delgado, the spokesman for the 502nd Air Base Wing, said in a statement that the lockdown was lifted Sunday night after officials decided it was safe to return to normal operations. It was not clear how long the person was taken into custody or how long he would be held or whether or not charges would be filed, and there was nobody else with him in the vehicle. And according to the military officials, that man drove through the gate at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, and he was a Saudi national, and that explosive materials were found in his vehicle. No motive as of yet, and military officials are not saying that it was an act of terrorism. Obviously, he didn't get very far, so there you go. That's what's going on there. We talked a little bit yesterday about the shooting of an unarmed Brooklyn man in New York, obviously because I just mentioned Brooklyn. We were talking about Akai Gurley, the gentleman who was walking down the stairwell with his girlfriend, and a law enforcement officer, without saying anything to him, decided to shoot him in his stomach. And he fell down three flights of stairs and died. So there are mixed reports right now. The police department, unusually, and this is just ridiculous to me, is saying that the guy, for some reason, had his firearm in his hand, in his left hand, and he was opening a doorknob with that hand at the same time, and that's when the shot went off and accidentally hit this guy. To which I say, No, that's not true. I'm sorry. No, I don't care. No, that's not true. Okay. First of all, why would you have your gun out of its holster? I know you're a rookie, but unless you're a rookie with the IQ of a bag of potato chips, you don't unholster your weapon. That's like day number one. Here's how to be a police officer, day 101 type class stuff. Don't take your weapon out unless you intend to use it. Most 6-year-olds are taught that basic hunting safety when their parents take them out. Anyway, so the police are saying the guy had his gun in his hand and was fumbling with the doorknob and accidentally shot this guy. Obviously ridiculous, right? But if that is the case, we're talking about a very clear-cut case of negligent homicide, right? You can't just be negligent with a firearm, you know, trying to turn off a light switch with your freaking gun and shoot somebody and expect not to go to jail. So given that is the storyline that the police are going with right now, they are charging this guy with a felony homicide, which is fantastic news. Whether or not they're going to roll it over into negligent homicide, I don't know. But probably one of the first and only instances of a police officer doing something wrong and actually getting charged with it. So wanted to bring that up right now. and of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to the Gurley family, the girlfriend, and I mean, just tragic. It's tragic and stupid, really, and that's a horrible combination, but that seems to be where we are in the United States these days. The Department of Homeland Security is poised now to ditch all of the records from a controversial network monitoring system called Einstein that are at least 3 years old, and they're not doing it for security reasons, according to the DHS. And the reason these files, which include data about traffic to government websites, agency network intrusions, and general vulnerabilities, they say have no significant research value. But some experts say, au contraire, the DHS would be deleting a treasure trust of historical threat data, and privacy experts who wish that the metadata wasn't collected at all, saying that destroying it could eliminate evidence that the government-wide surveillance system does not perform as intended. I think that's probably more in line with why these people are destroying these records, and the National Archives and Record Administration has tentatively approved the disposal plan pending a public comment period. And when I find out where to place those public comments, I will direct all of you. I will find as many of you trolls in the basements of your parents' houses as I possibly can, and we will direct your energy in an appropriate manner to the DOJ. Okay, the White House quietly releases plans for 3,415 different regulations ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. So while most Americans are focused on what delicious foods they're going to eat this Thanksgiving, the White House focused on releasing its massive regulatory agenda, marking the fifth time the Obama administration has released its regulatory roadmap on the eve of a major holiday. The Federal Unified Agenda is the Obama administration's regulatory roadmap. It lays out thousands of regulations being finalized in the coming months. And Barack Obama, under Barack Obama, there has been a tradition of releasing the agenda late on Friday and right before a major holiday. So 3,415 regulations, more than the last regulatory agenda. That one included, and this one includes 189 rules that are going to cost more than $100 million, and they're just going to sneak that in on a Friday night so nobody notices. Par for the course. Happy to be a part of it all. New York sending a warning to its public schools to expect more illegal immigrants. The City Department of Education has told principals it plans this year to enroll 2,350 migrant children from Central America who crossed into the United States unaccompanied, with many more to come. They go on to say that it is expected that children will continue to arrive in large numbers in the coming years. Obviously, that agenda is still carrying on with Biden going down to South America and telling everyone that we are going to grant amnesty to all of their children. In that, of course, and that was on the tail end of the surge that we just saw over the summer, with, I think, total about 63,000 migrant kids who were caught trying to cross the border or who turned themselves in. But 5,000 of those kids have been released to relatives or other sponsors in the New York State. So New York public school systems are getting ready, are bracing for impact at this point. And another crazy bit of news. Hagel, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, has resigned as of yesterday under pressure from Barack Obama, and Barack Obama essentially determined that he had to shake up his national security team in the face of escalating conflicts overseas and hawkish Republicans reasserting themselves on Capitol Hill. It was a striking reversal for a president who chose Mr. Hagel 2 years ago, in part to limit the power of Pentagon officials who had repeatedly pushed for more troops in Afghanistan and a slower drawdown of American forces from Iraq. But in the end, Mr. Hagel's passivity and lack of support in Obama's inner circle proved too much for an administration that found itself back on a war footing. Aides from Mr. Obama made the decision to remove his defense secretary on Friday after weeks of rising tension over a variety of issues, including what administration officials said were Mr. Hagel's delays in transferring detainees from the military prison in Guantanamo Bay, and a dispute with Susan Rice, the national security advisor, over Syrian policy. So Chuck Hagel will be no more. They have not indicated who his replacement will be yet, but as soon as we know, you will know also. So that's kind of what's going on in the national front right now. Obviously, the Ferguson situation as it erupts into many, many other cities today. We will be back talking about that, I'm sure, and I will get you guys up to date before the end of this hour also, just in case anything else is happening out there. Moving into the national arena right now, the UK, according to Reuters, is facing its largest terrorism threat ever in its history. And according to Home Secretary Theresa May, and she said this just yesterday, they're saying that they have foiled about 40 major plots since suicide bombers attacked London back in 2005. And the government would, as of tomorrow, set out new laws to take on the militants, according to May, including legislation making it easier for security services to track attackers online and to check if radicalized fighters were also flying into Britain. May said that about 40 terrorist plots had been disrupted, and these included attempts to conduct Mumbai-style gun attacks on British streets, to blow up the London Stock Exchange, and to bring down airliners and murder a British ambassador and military servicemen. Planned new measures include giving police the power to seize for up to 30 days the passports of British and foreign nationals suspected of traveling to take part in terrorist-related activities, according to May, and the new laws will also make it easier for police to identify who is using an internet service at any given time. So, more rule changes going on in Britain. Now, are they fanning the flame of hysteria in terms of terrorism, or are they actually being honest in that the UK has been inundated with terrorists? It's difficult to say at this point. Again, coming out of Reuters, you have to take it with a grain of salt. But they did have a very interesting incident. I believe it was last week when there was a foiled attempt at a stabbing of the Queen, and they actually arrested two gentlemen. I don't know how they got information out about a stabbing. How would you, you'd have to have some pretty loose lips, in my opinion, to get information like that out about. But anyway, there could be more terrorist activities. Actually, and that reminds me, since we're talking about terrorism activities right now, I don't think anybody else has mentioned this, at least I haven't heard it mentioned anywhere, but we are knee-deep in false flag territory, guys. We are at a place right now, I think, where it's pretty apparent that we're in one of the most dangerous situations that our country has ever been in. And we have a pretty major event happening this week. A lot of you may not be thinking about it, but the Macy's Day Parade happens every Thanksgiving. And if you were somebody who wanted to do harm against a lot of people, that would be a pretty big opportunity to do it. So I want to just kind of mention to people, A, to keep that in the back of your mind, that if you're planning on attending that event, please keep your head on a swivel. If you understand that these people that might want to attack us sometimes focus on symbolism, well, the Macy's Day Parade is kind of chock full of symbolism. It's full of symbolism about commerce, about economy, about childhood wants and wishes and things like that, all of them stemming from Western culture and could obviously be focused on as a key point of attack if you followed that whole they hate us for our freedoms motif, or they hate us for our economic freedom, or whatever the motif is that the terrorists hate us for these days. If you follow that line of reasoning, you could pretty clearly indicate that the Macy's Day Parade might be a target. So I just kind of want to mention that right now. Not that I hope that I'm right in any way, shape, or form, but I do want to mention it just in case there are people out there who are planning on going. Be careful. Be careful and keep your head on the swivel. Just saying. And then in another interesting international news, I love this story. This is the president from Finland. We talked a little bit about Finland's apprehension about joining NATO and kind of being on the fence about it. Well, the president of Finland has come out now and says there's no way they're going to join NATO. And he essentially says that it would undoubtedly harm their relations with Russia, which is what Russia has been saying. He says you have to keep in mind 1,300 kilometers is a long, long border, and you don't just keep it closed. He says, on the contrary, it's a living border. But he does go on to say, and this is the part about this that I find to be very interesting, is that Finland really should have joined NATO 20 years ago. And he goes on to admit that it was probably a pretty big mistake for them not to have joined NATO 20 years ago. But now, caught between a rock and a hard place, probably better to go ahead and placate Russia on this particular play. Anyway, that's what's going on. We've got some more national news and international news to get to, economic stuff and health stuff, plus tech stuff. Keep it right here. Lots of headlines to come. And Alfred Adasco.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. ProductUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Whitgate, Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. This is your daily dose of deprogramming, and it is the bottom of the first hour right now. We are live like we are every single day of the week, except for Saturday and Sunday, because we like to take the weekends off also. But Monday through Friday, we do our very best in the first hour to bring you all the pertinent news of the day. Today is no exception. There's a lot of things to talk about. I want to quickly, though, backtrack to how impressed I am today with the website, redpillreports.com. It's looking so beautiful. Rob's done such a wonderful job. But I want to draw your attention to the fact that we now have carrot bars on the website. I know a lot of you who've been following me for a long time know how excited I am about carrot bars as a company and how proud I am to be an affiliate with carrot bars. But now there is a way for all of you out there who don't know about carrot bars to go to the carrot bars banner at the top of redpillreports.com, and you can learn all about essentially what it is a gold savings plan, guys. And this is a fantastic way to get yourself into physical possession of gold in small amounts that you can actually use if things were to go bad, and you could actually use them if things were good. I've used mine garage sales. I've used mine all over, and just love them enough. So please go check out the Carrot Bars link on the website right now. And also, please get these articles that are on the top of the page, the Your Mortgage Could Be Compromised and the Learn If Your Mortgage Is Compromised articles, and print them out. Get a bunch of copies of those and get them to your friends and families this week for the holidays, because this is really important information. And again, we're going to have Greg Morse on Thursday live on Thanksgiving, so we can talk a little bit more about how this mortgage crisis actually affects each of us individually. But the link for the petition that Greg Morse has got up, also calling for a public federal joint congressional investigation hearing, is also on our site. Please, once you learn how messed up the mortgage system is, go and sign this petition and get everyone you know to sign it also. This is, I mean, Greg Morse, man, you want to talk about tip of the spear in the battle against corruption. Greg Morse is it. I don't think you could find a sharper guy, and I don't mean that as a pun, but he is absolutely at the forefront of this battle, and it is our absolute privilege to be supporting him in that. So please support us in supporting him by going and getting those articles and get them printed out and into your friends and family's hands. It's a perfect week to do that with the holiday coming up. So let's jump back into international news. Some rhetoric coming out of North Korea now. They announced on Sunday, they denounced on Sunday a recent UN resolution condemning its human rights violations, warning of retaliation against Japan and other sponsor countries. They said, and this is, of course, according to Pyongyang's official Korean Central News Agency, that we will take the toughest counteraction against the United States, and Japan, too, can never escape this toughest counteraction. They go on to say that Japan should bear in mind that if it continues behaving as now, it will disappear from the world map for good, not just remaining a near yet distant country, according to their statement. The resolution passed Tuesday by the Third Committee of the UN General Assembly sought to refer the North's human rights records to the International Criminal Court and to hold the country's top leaders responsible for crimes against humanity. The resolution, which was introduced by Japan and the EU, reflects a UN Commission's of Inquiry's lengthy report in February on what it says was systemic, widespread, and gross human rights violations that have been and are being committed by North Korea. So obviously North Korea not happy to be the under the focal point of international scrutiny in terms of its human rights violations. But I think we probably have all seen that coming for a long time. Whether or not they will wipe Japan off of the map remains to be seen. Hopefully they won't. I'll just say that. The Israeli cabinet approved legislation defining the nation state of Israel for the Jewish people. Now, this is a very controversial bill that officially defines Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people, and it has been approved by cabinet despite warnings that the move risks undermining the country's democratic character. Opponents, including some cabinet members, said the new legislation defined reserved national rights for Jews only and not for its minorities, and rights groups condemned it as racist. The bill, which is intended to become part of Israel's basic laws, would recognize Israel's Jewish character, institutionalize Jewish law, and as an inspiration for legislation, and delist Arabic as the second official language. But unfortunately, Arab Muslims and Christians do make up 20% of Israel's population. I wonder if they should just rename Israel New Zion. That's probably too much of an editorialization, so I will digress. Libyan airstrikes hit Tripoli's last functioning airport yesterday. A Libyan Air Force jet has carried out two attacks on the Metiga airbase in Tripoli, and this is the Libyan capital's last functioning airports. The strikes hit an area near the runway but did not damage it. They did, however, cause some damage to nearby civilian homes, and the coalition of militias that controls Tripoli called it a provocative move by foreign-backed forces. The airlines have been using the Matiga Air Force Base since July, when the fighting caused severe damage to Tripoli's main international airport. So that is what's going on in Libya right now. Still a lot happening there. Putin has now said that he won't be Russia's president for life. So all of you who are out there worried that Putin will never, ever step down, you can rest easy. He says he will not be president past 2024, according to an interview with a Russian news agency released yesterday. Putin, who is 62 right now, has effectively led Russia since he was first elected in 2000. He stepped aside after 2 4-year terms to abide with the constitutional term limits, but he retained power as prime minister and was elected in 2012 to a 6-year term. He said his decision on whether to run for a fourth term in 2018 will depend on the situation in the country and his own mood. So I believe that Putin will be around for quite a long time. How about China is now building a giant island in the South China Sea large enough for an airstrip? Yeah, that's what's happening there. China is constructing a giant island in disputed waters in the South China Sea. Could be used as an airstrip, according to satellite images provided by the Defense and Security Group, IHS. They show China is building what appears to be an offshore airstrip in the Spratly Islands. And the island is 1.9 miles long and anywhere from 660 to 980 feet wide, which the IHS says is large enough to construct a runway and an apron. They also say that they are seeing China building a large harbor there, big enough to receive tankers and other major surface combatants. Interesting, because they are building it, A, in disputed waters. They are in dispute with the Philippines right now about who actually owns this, but they are carrying forth with the building of this already. And so that's what's going on with China right now. More rhetoric coming from them, and more military capability will be there in the short future, I can see. So let's get into the economic stuff happening right now. Checking on the markets, fairly flat right now, 17.811, down about 5 points in early trading. Probably going to be a flat market for a midweek. Gold staying right at the $1,200 mark, just a hair below it, 11.99 right now. And silver also kind of coming up just a touch to 16.64. And oil staying flat right now, 75.25 for a barrel of crude right now. Let's go to some Bitcoin news. The eBay CEO has come out yesterday saying that he is very open to Bitcoin and that eBay will most likely experiment with a digital currency in the future. This is another major boon for Bitcoin. If you're following along, obviously following in the footsteps of PayPal, who said that they were exploring allowing vendors to use Bitcoin as part of their payment platform and then extending that payment platform to different vendors. Obviously, eBay and PayPal are still essentially connected at the hip, even though they did orchestrate a split earlier this year, but they really still fundamentally are the same company. They just tried to separate some of their funding. But I think that obviously if PayPal is interested in Bitcoin, then eBay most likely will follow suit and probably be one of the first large vendors that we see that will accept Bitcoin over its pay platform. So if you're into Bitcoin, probably some more good news as far as that goes. And I want to bring your attention to a Zero Hedge article that came out talking about Deutsche Bank's modest proposal to the central banks of the EU, instructing them to purchase the gold held by private reserves. So we've been talking about this, the idea of quantitative easing as a way to mitigate damage to the economy. We've also talked about central banks hoarding their gold in order to bolster their own reserves. But the Deutsche Bank Behavioral Finance Department put out a very interesting little blurb yesterday, and I'm just going to read the highlighted portion right now. But they're talking about gold purchases in general having merit as a benefit to central banks, even though much gold is held in private households, especially in countries like Germany. They go on to say, in some cases, there are unwanted remains of the crisis-driven investments from 5 years ago, and a program that targeted these holdings would liberate dormant liquidity, some of which might even flow into consumption. Okay, so what are they saying? They're saying all the world central banks would really need to do, and all they really need to do is to get a system together that would make this happen, is to quote-unquote liberate dormant liquidity held, as Deutsche Bank suggests, by private household in various unwanted troves of physical gold, and in the process build up their own gold holdings, which would make said gold fairly unattractive to hold. And so we can see that that's obviously the next step in the plan here. And then, okay, what if that fails? Well, FDR kind of already showed the world how to deal with the public that doesn't want to part with its gold back in that old Executive Order 6102, something that the Dutch Central Bank has also made news recently when it secretly repatriated 122 tons of gold from the Fed, something that they already did years ago when it advised pension funds to sell their gold. Obviously, what we're talking about here is the big C word, confiscation. So if they cannot get a plan together to convince families out there who are holding on to their gold as part of their, you know, quote-unquote crisis-driven investments from 5 years ago, if they can come up with a plan to get all those people to sell their gold to the Federal Reserve, that would be great. But we can see, obviously, what would happen if that didn't take place, that confiscation is probably the last play in the old deck of cards there. FBI file says that a hedge fund manager made millions of dollars on tips from a Dell insider. The FBI files have spelled it out. An analyst at Citadel LLC, the hedge fund with $23 billion in capital invested globally, told agents that he made millions of dollars trading on information from a company insider. This was back in 2011, and the Justice Department was deep into a seven-year investigation into illegal stock tips. And as authorities homed in on people at several other hedge funds over leaks from Dell Incorporated, agents at the Federal Bureau of Investigation began questioning a Citadel analyst about the friendship he formed with the same Dell insider. In confidential FBI reports summarizing those interviews, agents recounted how the Citadel analyst received market-sensitive information from the Dell employee back in 2008 and 2009. In one trade specifically, he told agents that he made the analyst bet against Dell after learning that it would announce disappointing earnings, bringing in $5 to $6 million when the company's shares fell by more than 10%. He also told agents that he later discarded those records. Nine people at five different investment firms were eventually convicted in part of this trading for tips from inside of Dell, but neither the analyst Richard Farmer nor the Dell employee Rob Ray were sued by the regulators or prosecuted, and the Chicago-based Citadel has never been accused of any wrongdoing. Imagine that, par for the course, happy to be a part of it all. There you go. Auto loan delinquencies, back in the news right now. Again, another great Zero Hedge article. A lot of people are not paying attention to the subprime market that has exploded with the auto industry Just like the housing bubble in 2008, we're seeing the precursors to a similar bubble in the subprime auto loan arena. But now auto loan delinquency rates have jumped nearly 13% in the last year, according to a new report by TransUnion. And with young, and we're talking under 30 Americans, seeing a 17.8% surge in the 60-plus day delinquency rates as auto loan debt rose for the 14th straight quarter to an average of $17,352. While these are notable rises, the overall levels remain low for now, but subprime loan delinquencies rose notably, as I said, by 5.31% in this quarter. And I think that's going to be the bubble that breaks. I think that'll be the next big one, and I know there are a lot of people out there who think that as well. And want to also draw your attention to a story. Just as a side here, there are more payday lenders in the United States now than there are Starbucks or McDonald's. That's right. Payday lending, in which users pay a fee for what amounts to essentially an advance on their paychecks, has blossomed over the last 20 years, and there are now more than 20,000 across the country, according to the United States Federal Reserve, while McDonald's boasts only 14,000 different locations. And I don't want to get too far into the payday loan debacle, but essentially it's not a good system, man. These people get trapped in it, and they end up paying annual percentage interest rates of something like 300%. It's a complete dead-end cycle, and I recommend everybody stay as far away from those places as they possibly can, because they will absolutely ruin you. So anyway, more of those than McDonald's now. Just shows the state of our country where fast money is more important than fast food. Who knows if that's a good thing or not? Tough to say. Let's see here. Getting into some tech news right now. A really interesting story coming out from The Intercept talking about secret malware in the European Union attack linking to the U.S. and British intelligence agencies. We mentioned this a tiny bit yesterday, but getting into it a little bit deeper, the complex malware known as Regen is the suspected technology behind sophisticated cyber attacks conducted by U.S. and British intelligence agencies in the European Union and a Belgian telecommunications company, according to security industry sources and technical analysis conducted by The Intercept. Regen was found to be was found on infected internal computer systems and email servers at Belgicom, which is a partially state-owned Belgian phone and internet provider, following reports last year that the company was targeted in a top-secret surveillance operation carried out by British spy agency GCHQ. The malware, which steals data from infected systems, is disguised as a legitimate Microsoft software and has also been identified on the same EU computer systems that were targeted for surveillance by the NSA. The hacking operations against Belgicom and the EU were first revealed last year through documents leaked by the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, but the specific malware used in those attacks had never been disclosed. And now we're talking about, of course, the Regen malware, whose existence was first reported by the security firm Symantec just this last Sunday, is amongst the most sophisticated ever discovered by researchers. Symantec compared Regen to Stuxnet, which is a state-sponsored malware program developed by the United States and Israel to sabotage computers at an Iranian nuclear facility. Sources familiar with the internal investigations at Belgicom and the EU have confirmed to The Intercept that the Regen malware was found on their systems after they were compromised, linking the spy tool to the secret GCHQ and NSA operations. So, good times, great oldies. Another old hat. I have an interesting, I don't know if it's a health warning or if it's a tech warning, because we're talking about e-cigarettes right now. Of course, a lot of people out there who were long-time smokers switched over to the e-cigarettes, you know, the vapor pens and things like that. But something that you may not have considered outside of the health ramifications of whatever that magic goo is that you're putting inside of your vapor pen is the fact that these vapor pens come, for the most part, from China, and there have now been many, many instances of these USB charging vapor pens being affected by malware. And so a lot of people understand that you can charge your e-cigarettes by connecting into a USB port, either with a special cable or by plugging the cigarette itself directly into the USB port. But if so, that means that a cheap e-cigarette from an untrustworthy supplier gains physical access to your device. And a recent report on the social news site Reddit suggests that at least one vaporer a guy who uses the vapors, has suffered the downside of trusting their cigarette manufacturer. One particular executive had a malware infection on his computer from which the source could not be determined, and after all traditional means of infection were covered, the IT started looking into the other possibilities. And the made-in-China e-cigarette had malware hard-coded into the charger, and when plugged into the computer's USB port, the malware phoned home and infected the system. So, not only is your physical health potentially at risk from those e-cigarettes, again, I don't know enough about that to comment on it. I know there's probably varying reports on both sides of the fence as to the health. Probably still at this point more healthy than regular smoking. But not only that health concern in terms of physical, but your health concern of your computer could also be in jeopardy. And until I'd read that report, probably would not have been a thought in my mind. So I wanted to bring it up with you guys just in case that somebody out there could be affected by that. Nestle right now, this is wild. Nestle, guys, is trying to develop exercise in a bottle. That's right, exercise in a bottle. They are working on the holy grail of weight loss, a fat-burning additive that could be dropped into foods and to replicate the effects of exercise, but without all the sweaty reality of actually having to do it. The team is based at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology and is exploring how a new compound, dubbed C13, could be used in food to stimulate the enzymes which control how the body burns fats and sugars. If it's tweaked in just the right way, according to Nestle, that could mean a new age of foods which would allow the body to get the same fitness benefits from a brisk walk as it would normally take from much more strenuous exercise. So at the root of the research is an enzyme called AMPK, which regulates how the body burns fat and sugar. AMPK, or 5-adrenazone, that's a big word, I can't say any of that, or we'll just call it AMPK, is not a new focus for weight loss, but the challenge has now been to stimulate it in a controlled way. So Nestle's goal is to package the C13 into a food additive that could turn its products, including those not traditionally associated with healthy eating, like those high in sugar or high in fat, into clandestine exercise boosters. The research could also have a significant improvement on health products such as slimming drinks and weight loss bars. And Nestle says it intends to continue the research on its own rather than call in the help of a more traditional pharmaceutical firm. But those waiting for a slim down in a pill or in a bottle might have to be waiting a little bit longer. They said there's a long ways to go until the fruits of this research actually reach the shelves, and of course it will have to pass regulatory approvals first. But the potential market for such a product is absolutely ginormous. Even if Nestle can only figure out a way, you know, to marginally improve or affect a select audience which might struggle for other reasons to integrate the recommended degree of exercise into their daily lives, that would just be huge just for that small demographic. Nonetheless, the company is aiming to merely augment physical activity, not to replace it altogether. They recognize that exercise has many different effects, a cognitive role, and a physiological function. And they go on to say that they'll never be able to mimic all of those effects in a single product. But they are, as I said, hoping to find natural substances which could stimulate and control the AMPK mechanism. So, exercise in a bottle being worked on by our good friends over at Nestle. They always have our best interests at heart. Always, you can tell, right? And another fantastic piece of medical news, and this is a story coming out of Oregon. I really wanted to bring this up. We're talking about a young man who is only 8. His name is Forrest Smelsler, and he has been living with epilepsy. He was diagnosed with epilepsy the day after his 8th birthday and was subject to an onslaught of seizures. Sometimes on his worst days, experiencing as many as 15 in a day. And the mom goes on to say that, you know, experiencing a seizure longer than 3 minutes could really lead into brain damage territory. He was prescribed Triloptol, which is an anti-seizure medication. His situation went from very bad to very, very bad very quickly. He would scream, he would fight, he would punch himself. He became suicidal, which is amazing, at only 8 years of old. And so his family finally hit the breaking point. They reached out to TJ's Organic Gardens, which is a Eugene, Oregon-based medical marijuana farm that provides high CBD-based cannabis to epileptic seizure sufferers. And it is my pleasure to report that while this gentleman, this young man, has been taking 3 CBD pills made with CBD oil three times a day. He has not had a seizure in 9 weeks. And man, that makes me want to cry. It's such good news. People want to talk about cannabis and the non-medical benefits. Man, just go look at Forrest. Look at Forrest. Living a normal life. He's saying now that he feels like a normal boy, and that is just awesome. Just awesome. So, moving on again, to one other story I wanted to touch on really quickly. I try and, bring up some good news on a day if I can, every day. And I thought somebody sent me a picture of a letter that the Lego Corporation used to include in every single Lego set that they sent back in the 1970s. Listen to this note. This was a note that was sent to parents in the Lego box back in the 1970s. And this is what it says. It says, "To parents, the urge to create is equally strong in all children, boys and girls. It's imagination that counts, not skill. You build whatever comes into your mind in any way that you like it. It could be a bed or a truck or a dollhouse or a spaceship." He says, "A lot of boys like dollhouses. They're more human than spaceships. A lot of girls prefer spaceships. They're a lot more exciting than dollhouses. But the most important thing is to put the right material in their hands and let them create whatever appeals to them." Ah, I love it. I love it. I love it. What happened to corporate responsibility? What happened to giving our kids the tools they need to become complete individuals? Ah, I just love it. I wish that Lego would follow suit and release an update and start including it back again. But man, what a great thing, and I hope that makes you guys smile the way it makes me smile. Some other headlines that I'm obviously not going to get to today, just so you guys know, if you come to redpillreports.com, you can follow along with the news section. We are going to be speaking with Alfred Adask in the next hour about the legal principle, man or other animals, where that phrase comes from, and why it is so important that we understand it, because once it is set as a precedent that you and I are animals, ladies and gentlemen, all bets are off in terms of our rights. I'm not going to get through these headlines right now. So again, go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section, and you'll see all the news I could not get to. Please stick with us through this 3-minute break. Alfred Adask will be our guest in the next hour. Very appreciative of you guys hanging on. This is the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 25th day of November. My name is JT Carlisle. Right here.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to AllGov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Teach.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is 11 o'clock Central Time right now, and it's the 25th day of November. We are live, like we are every day, Monday through Friday. And I'm very thankful for all of you who have decided to tune in on a daily basis to make us your one-stop shopping for your prescription of truth, guys. That's what we all are about here. And in that vein, it is my esteemed privilege to be welcoming Alfred Adask to the show. For those of you who don't know, Alfred Adask worked as a construction worker for a while, as a ditch digger, truck driver, heavy equipment operator, etc.
Before for 25 years.
That's a pretty long time, Alfred. That's a long time. And then a divorce compelled you to become a student of the legal system, and then one thing led to another. He wound up publishing the Anti-Shyster News magazine for more than 14 years. 12 years, and actually ended up running for the Texas Supreme Court back in 1992, and I'd love to hear that story. Also motivating and hosting this country's largest legal reform meetings twice a month and being identified by the federal government as one of the top dozen anti-government activists during the 1990s. So we are definitely in good company today, ladies and gentlemen. To say he's a large fish in a small pond would be an understatement. Alfred, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports broadcast today.
Glad to be here, JD. Appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, we appreciate you being here, and I'm really excited to be introducing you to some of our listeners out there that may not have heard of you before, because some of your work is just astounding. But before we get into some of your work, is there anything else about your background that you think that we need to know just to kind of get some insight into who you are and how you came into this fight?
Well, you mentioned the divorce. That's what got me going and changed my life from being a construction worker. Before I went through the divorce, I couldn't publish. I couldn't spell the word publisher, and now I are one. You know, that sort of thing. You get your lives changed in strange ways, and it's the sort of thing where you go. I don't have the credentials to do some of the things that I've at least tried to do, mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said for that, because if I'd had those credentials, I would have seen the world the way we're programmed to see it.
Right.
And because I didn't have the credentials, I kind of looked at things with an open, if confused, mind. And one thing led to another, and you come up with some insights, and sometimes they work.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, talk to us a little bit about this, the man and other animals issue, because, you know, I'd heard about it before you and I had a discussion yesterday, but it never really dawned on me how important that specific phrase was. Where did you first discover that phrase? How did you get invested in researching that phrase? And what have you determined are the ramifications of that classification by the government and its agencies of human beings or of Americans as animals? What does that mean?
Well, it first started this project, in a sense, this insight started in 2001, when a man and his wife and their corporation were sued by the Attorney General of Texas and the Texas Department of State Health Services for $25,000 per day per defendant. 25 for husband, 25 for wife, 25 for the corporation. 75 grand a day translates into about $27 million a year.
Wow, okay.
This is because they were sued for the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance. This would be the same sort of law that you might use if you were dealing in heroin or cocaine, except it's civil rather than criminal, and the controlled substance was colloidal silver.
Oh, my goodness.
These people were probably the single biggest producer of colloidal silver in the United States at that time.
Okay.
They hired one of the better law firms in Texas, spent $160,000 on legal fees, defending them against the attorney general and so on, and the net result was it drove them into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Bankruptcy caused a divorce. The two of them got at each other's throats because the stress drove them into a divorce, and they eventually left Texas for parts unknown.
Wow.
Before they left, they sold some of their equipment and some of their supplies to another man in Texas, and it appeared that the lawsuit had died off. It was still live, but they thought the lawsuit was over. They hadn't heard from the attorney general for a while. So this other guy, he bought some of their equipment, and next thing you know, the attorney general, he didn't buy their business. He just bought their equipment. All right?
Yeah.
This is the equivalent of me buying a used car that was used by Bonnie and Clyde. And somebody coming in and said, well, we're going to arrest you for bank robbery.
Right.
Wait a second. I didn't join the gang. All I did was buy a used car.
Right.
All right? This was pretty much the same situation. They came after this guy. They added him and his corporation and his trust, which had begun to manufacture colloidal silver. They added him and those for three more defendants. He'd heard about me. Somebody he knew, a friend of his, said, why don't you call this guy Addis? Maybe he could help. Mm-hmm. And he called up, and we got in touch, and one thing led to another. And I wound up helping. And I volunteered to be fiduciary for his trust.
Okay.
Because he didn't like to speak in public, and I don't mind. And if I was fiduciary, I presumed I'd have standing to speak in court, and that's something I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered to be fiduciary for the trust, and the attorney general said, well, good, glad to have you. And they added me as the seventh defendant.
Now, welcome to the
2006.
Party.
Welcome to the party. Yeah. This thing started in 2001. I am added as a defendant in 2006. I am now subject to fines of $25,000 per day, $9 million a year. Right, which, as I told you yesterday, it really focuses your attention.
Yeah, it would do.
Yeah. So I start studying, and there's a mass of paperwork. There's filing cabinets. I think they had three, four filing cabinets at the Assistant Attorney General's office that dealt just with this case and everything that had been going on during this, 5 years before I was added to this,
mm-hmm.
to the proceeding. I start studying the most recent document, and I'm looking at a copy of it right now, which I've posted on my blog. It's been there for years now, but it says the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment, dated on or about May 31st, 2006, declared in part, 4.2, paragraph 4.2, definition of a drug pursuant to state and federal health codes. This is, I'm reading from the attorney general's paperwork now. They're essentially their complaint that went into the court.
Okay.
And it says, and they write, the key to this case lies in determining at law, not as a matter of fact, whether the defendant's colloidal products met the definition of a drug when mislabeled, falsely advertised, and sold as products intended to treat diseases. And they quote the Texas Health and Safety Code, section 431.002, subparagraph 14, and it provides in pertinent part. And so I'm reading this. They're telling me this is the key to the case.
Right.
Right? So I say, okay, I'm not a skilled litigator, but I have brains enough to know that if this is the key to the case, I want to read this, because if I can find a way of getting around the key, we walk, right? And they say, and they quote the Texas Health and Safety Code, drug means articles recognized in the United States, pharmacopoeia, national formulary, any supplement to it, articles designed or intended for the use in the diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease in man or other animals.
Oh.
Right? And I saw the phrase man or other animals, and again, my first reaction was, why, you damn fools, you don't even know how to write. I assumed they had to mean man or animals.
Right.
If you say man or other animals, man is in one classification, animals are another. It recognizes that they're different. When you say man or other animals, you are presuming man to be an animal. If I said a horse or other animals, it makes perfect sense. A horse is a specific kind of the general classification animals.
Yeah.
Horse or other animals. Cow or other animals. If I say man or other animals, it means the government presumes man to be an animal. Now, a lot of people don't find that remarkable because they've been taught to believe in the theory of evolution.
Right.
And they accept the idea that we are all just evolved from little lemurs and whatever else came out of the amphibians and lemurs and primates and so on. And here we are, but we are just another variety of animal. But I'm a student of the Bible. I'm not a scholar, but I'm a student. And I saw man or other animals. I said, the first thing I said is, well, you guys are crazy. Because I know that Genesis 1, 26 through 28, says that on the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. Which means that as a Christian, or if I were a Jew, same thing, I can't be declared to be an animal without violating my freedom of religion.
Right.
Okay? They're saying man has dominion over the animals. That's what it says in the Bible at Genesis 1, 26 through 28. That means man can't be an animal. All right, so I'm reading this, man or other. The first thing I thought, well, you idiots, you don't know what you're doing. And it continues. It says in mitigation, treatment, prevention of disease in man or other animals, articles other than food intended to affect the structure or any function of the body of man or other animals. And I see man or other animals for the first time, or excuse me, for the second time in the same sentence.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God, they don't, this isn't a mistake.
Right.
This isn't stupidity. They really do think of us as animals. Mm-hmm. And then below that, we had the federal code, which is virtually identical, almost word for word, the federal definition of drugs, and you can find it at Title 21, Section 321 of the United States Code, subparagraph G1. And they define drugs. And again, they use man or other animals, and they use it twice. And, I mean, I saw this, and I just about fell off my chair.
Yeah.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
We have talked for years that people have talked metaphorically that the government deems us to be nothing but animals on the global plantation. And I read this and I said, my God, they really do. It's not just a metaphor. They really do see us as animals. Now, this is no small thing because, number one, it's a violation of our freedom of religion. I guarantee you, if you happen to believe in the Messiah and the Christ, if you're a Christian, there is nothing in the Bible I'm aware of where he came to save the animals. Right?
Right.
He's only here to save the men and women who are made in God's image as per Genesis 1, 26 through 28. He's not saving the horses and the cows and the pigs and the goats, just the men and women made in God's image.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is important from a spiritual perspective. Oh, what's the other one? Something was going through my mind and it just can't, it's there for a while and then it's gone. In any case, saw this, realized, here's the other one. This is where it really gets powerful in this country. The Declaration of Independence starts out, second sentence in the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The next sentence in the Declaration of Independence says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're telling us that the principal business of government as envisioned by the Founding Fathers was to secure to every man, woman, and even unborn child those rights that were unalienable and given us by God.
Mm-hmm.
That was the purpose. This country started out as something very much like a theocracy. The purpose of government was to secure your God-given unalienable rights. Those rights attach as an attribute of your creation. It says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That tells us that the rights attach at the moment of creation. When are you created, J.D.?
At conception, in my opinion.
Yes, and certainly before birth.
Correct.
Which means that your unalienable right to life attaches at the moment of conception. And in fact, there's verse in the Bible, I believe it's in Jeremiah, where God's talking to Jeremiah and he said, I knew you before you were even in your mother's womb. Which means our creation actually precedes our conception.
Mm-hmm. You could take it into a spiritual realm too, because Jesus, I think it was in Timothy, but he says that no one who is here didn't first come from heaven, and nobody who's here now is not going to go back there. So, I mean, the spiritual ramifications to some of the words that Jesus said were just as significant, in my opinion.
I understand, but if you're an animal, that doesn't apply.
Correct.
All right. You don't get those God-given, unalienable rights, and the government, in the third sentence, is that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. They are discharged from their obligation to secure our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and there's others, but any of the rights that come from God, they don't have to do that if you are presumed to be an animal rather than a man made in God's image.
Wow. So they've essentially let themselves off of the hook from their responsibilities.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And it goes to the foundation of why they can kick you around, kick in the doors, seize your property, the rest of this sort of thing. This parallels. I won't say this is the only reason for that kind of activity, but they really don't have to recognize your rights because they are operating on the presumption that you are just livestock.
Right.
The implication, once we did this, we'd been getting documents, packages of motions and whatever from the Attorney General's office every 2 to 6 weeks for I don't know, a year or more that I'd been directly involved. Mm-hmm. We sent a defense in. We crafted a defense. And we sent it in and essentially said, look, you can't call us animals because we're Christians.
Mm-hmm.
We did a religious freedom defense, and they went dead silent for 5 months. We'd been getting paperwork, and it's unnerving to get certified mail every 2 to 6 weeks from the Attorney General's office saying, we're coming to get you.
Yeah.
We sent this defense and they went dead silent for 5 months, and we were thought, oh, maybe we got something here.
Right, right.
Well, they came back, the chief administrative judge for Travis County took control of the case. Mm-hmm. John K. Dietz, brilliant man. I like the guy. He tried to scare us initially when he took control of the case. And then when he saw that we weren't scared, he said, I'm going to do something I've never done before, or virtually never done before, I think was what he said. I'm going to invite you back into chambers and see if we can settle this case.
Wow.
And we said, okay.
Yeah.
Well, why not? You know? And one talked to him. He had another room for the assistant attorney general. We met. Nothing was accomplished. I think we met a total of 3 times over a period of the next five months to try to settle the case, and we wouldn't agree to a settlement. They got to where the only thing we had to do, we are facing fines of $25,000 per day, $9 million a year each. Right?
Yeah.
And their last deal was, look, we will cancel all the fines. We will cancel all the court costs. It won't cost you a nickel. Only thing they wanted is they wanted Ben Taylor to take a food manufacturer's license. That's all. It probably cost him $75 or something like that to get a food.
That's pretty minimal. I mean,
that's
given
a big change.
Yeah.
Threatened with millions of dollars of fines, we wouldn't take the deal.
Right.
Okay. And they threw us out. They said, well, you're not going to take the deal, so we're not going to talk to you anymore. They had 2 more hearings to where we were challenging jurisdiction, and they declared that they had jurisdiction. And then we haven't heard another word from them since.
Wow.
Okay? They just dropped the case. Now, this is unprecedented. We know from Assistant Attorney General Raul Noriega that we know the case has been going on since 2001, and they dropped it early 2007. Mm-hmm. They'd put in something like 6 years on this case. They'd spent close to $500,000 in pretrial investigations and pretrial hearings, and they just dropped the case, and they never even bothered to say, nice talking to you, or explain why. They just dropped it. Mm-hmm. It's because the insight, in my opinion, they never admitted this, right? But I assume the reason they dropped the case is because this man or other animal's insight is so powerful, mm-hmm, that the government would be deeply imperiled. If this goes to court and you get this in front of a jury and you explain to them, look, the government treats you as animals, ladies and gentlemen. Your kids as animals. It means your parents, your children, yourself, you don't have any meaningful rights. Mm-hmm. In 1935, when Nazi Germany, they passed what came to be called the Nuremberg Laws, and they declared the Jews to be Untermenschen. Unter means under, Mensch means man, it means subhuman, it means animals. Mm-hmm. Once they declared the Jews to be Untermenschen, it opened the door for concentration camps. You can exterminate animals. You can, like a nest of wasps, a hive of wasps, a nest of rats. You can exterminate them all. You can exterminate the men, the women, the children, anything. If you're animals, kill them all. It doesn't make any difference. The idea that we are animals opens the door to genocide. And the idea that we are animals underlies the entire war on drugs, which is based on the same definition of drugs I was reading from the Federal Code, Title 21, Section 321. The whole war on drugs is based on the presumption that you and I are nothing but animals. If we're not animals, we have rights to substantive due process, they have to prove criminal intent, all kinds of things happen. If you're an animal, all they have to do is prove conduct. Right. Not intent, just conduct. Wow. Right? It makes it infinitely easier to put people in jail if you presume them to be nothing but livestock. It lays the foundation for the prison industrial complex, the biggest police state in the world. We jail a bigger percentage of people in this country than any other nation on earth. Federal courts, 70% of the people in federal prisons are allegedly there on drug-related crimes. If this idea were to get out and break loose and be recognized, the prisons would go about 70% empty. All of the drug-related crimes disappear. American medicine is based on primarily drugs and medical devices. And if you read the definitions at 21 United States Code 321, you'll find the definition of drugs, you'll find the definition of food, you'll find the definition of devices, and they mean medical devices. Okay. Every one of them uses the phrase man or other animals.
Wow.
There's no American medicine that doesn't... Your doctor is a glorified vet.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Wow. He is licensed to work on primates.
Right.
Right. That's essentially what it comes down to. American medicine is jeopardized. All the billions of dollars that are in profit that are generated by American pharmaceutical industries are based on the presumption that you and I are nothing but animals. At the point in time when we can declare ourselves that, wait a second, I'm a man made in God's image, I'm endowed with certain unalienable rights, at that point in time, I am no longer captive to American medicine, I'm no longer captive to prescriptions, I'm no longer captive to the pharmaceutical industry. There's a lot that's at stake based on the presumption that we are nothing but animals. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about this over the years. I've had people contact me from England in one occasion, and another guy from either Australia or New Zealand, I never remember which anymore. They both said after hearing me talk, they went ahead and checked their own laws for definitions of drugs and food and devices, or at least drugs. I won't say that I don't remember that they said food and devices, but it's probably the same story. England's definition of drugs, according to people who contacted me, also presumes the people to be animals.
Wow.
So does either Australia or New Zealand. I don't remember which one. That tells me that the presumption that the people are nothing but animals is a corn. It's not just happening in this country. It's happening in multiple countries. And based on that presumption, I think that presumption is a cornerstone for the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All what they're trying to do, global government, all the rest of that, more than likely, I can't tell you that's God's truth, but more than likely it's based on the presumption that you are all livestock on the global plantation and they can dispose of you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the farmer disposes of cows and chickens and pigs and goats. No big deal. we'll just raise as many animals as we can afford, given the amount of food we have and whatever. And, if things get, you know, a little difficult, we'll just send a couple of the animals off to the food processing plant and they'll be turned into hamburger.
Wow.
Well, this is a big story.
It is a big story. I want to know how far back this presumption goes. In your research, how far back? Where
1906, Pure Food and Drug Act.
That's the first instance of this anywhere on the planet as far as your research goes?
That's the earliest we've been able to find. And anyone who's listening to this program, you can go ahead and just Google 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act. And you'll get to it. All right? And just scroll down through the act to Section 6. And you'll see that both the definition of food and the definition of drugs from 1906 onward has been in terms of man or other animals.
That's more than 100 years.
To the best of my knowledge, I am the first man to read the law and realize what it really meant in, 2006. It had been on the books for 100 years, and nobody had picked up on it, or if they had, I don't know, whatever they were arguing was made to disappear, but it's not knowledge. It's been there for 100 years. So.
Unbelievable. Wait. Now, is all of your research in this field up on your blog? Is that adask.wordpress.com?
Yeah. Okay. And you can look over on the right-hand side. There's a list of categories.
Okay.
The top category is man or other animals.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you click on it, and I've probably got 30 different articles that I've written over the course of the last 5 years or more. I don't remember. But there's a bunch of them. And if you scroll all the way down to the earliest article, you can see a copy of the document that we sent to the courts that we filed and blah, blah, blah. It's fairly extensive. I mean, we weren't sure of what we were doing, so we tried to double gild the lily.
Right. You understand? Yeah.
And we wrote this. We wrote more. Let's write some more. Let's put some more in there. And we were verbose and extensive. And we had a couple other lines of defense besides the definition of drugs and violation of freedom of religion. But that's the one that I believe carried the day.
Well, I think that's...
the implications were so enormous, they couldn't dare take us to court. They might be able to beat us.
Well, they can't take you to court. Well, A, I don't think they would beat you if you can, speak. Maybe, but imagine
like
what would happen if you...
Roulette.
What would happen if they lost? I mean, think about the precedent
that's
that would be set,
point.
You know.
If they win at the trial court level, they know we're going to appeal.
Right.
Next thing you know, we may have an appellate court that says, wait a second, you can't treat the people like animals.
Okay, we've got to run to a quick 3-minute break. We are with Alfred at Ask today. I hope you guys are enjoying the program. We'll be right back after 3 minutes. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Gardener.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
Spice extends life. X-Squared Radio with Brooks Atkins.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is bottom of the hour in the second hour of our live broadcast that we do every day. And we are very privileged to be joined by the one and only Alfred Adask today as we are talking about the legal concept, man and other animals, and how that presumption separates us from the accountability that the government is supposed to have over us in this constitutional republic as it was framed. And I hope all of you are enjoying this conversation. I should have probably prefaced this by saying that neither Alfred or myself are actually attorneys, and we don't here at Red Pill Reports offer legal advice. This is obviously just for your education and entertainment only, but I do want to recommend everybody go to adask.wordpress.com so you can delve deeper into these issues that he is uncovering for us today. Alfred, one of the things that we spoke about yesterday, which I think bears repeating, is some of the insight that you have into a legal document called a notice. And a lot of us get notices from places like corporate agencies like the IRS or from bill collectors and things like that. But the notice itself is a very special type of instrument. Do you want to give us some insight into what you've discovered about notices, sir?
I sure do, but before I do that, let me just, a couple of more comments cross my mind about man or other animals
okay.
that I'd like to add before we move on to notice.
Perfect.
And one of them is, why is it illegal to kill a man? You know why?
I do know why, and this is, I'm going to get way off into the fringe on you here, but it's because our country is bankrupt and has been bankrupt for a long time, and the way that these people float their fiat currency is by capitalizing or monetizing your future time, talent, and energy, which means that each of us has a material money value associated with us because we have the only real source of creation that exists on the planet, which is our brains, our time, talent, and energy. So they have figured out a way to capitalize on that by making our future time, talent, and energy the underlying support for the fiat currency. And when you kill a person, that's why you're charged with a crime, charged being the operative word here, is because you are taking money away from the bankers who own you. That's essentially why, in my opinion.
I don't doubt that may be correct. Right?
Yeah.
But I should have probably phrased my question a little differently. What's the reason it's been illegal, unlawful to kill a man for, let's say, 3,000 years?
Because they have divine rights from God, and you don't
have... That would be close. That's okay. Actually pretty close. Mm-hmm. You can read Genesis 9, verse 6. Mm-hmm. Right? And it will tell you that the reason you can't murder a man is because he is made in God's image. That's why it's a crime. That's why it's been a crime in the Western world for a good 3,000 years. Man is made in God's image, therefore you can't kill him. You can kill cows and pigs and sheep and the goats, but you can't kill a man because he's made in God's image. But if you can separate man from that principle, and you can say, no, 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 this guy's not made in God's image, he's just an animal, then you can kill him. Or you can even enslave him, which is part of the reason, part of the presumption for blacks being slaves in this country, is that they were only three-fifths of a man. They weren't really a man made in God's image. It laid the foundation for them to be slaves. So you can look at this at Genesis 9:6, and the last point I'd just like to make, there's a passage in the Bible in one or more places. It says, by their fruits ye shall know them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to compare the two philosophies, creationism, where under which man is made in God's image, right?
Mm-hmm.
Under creationism. Or you can get into evolution, or man is just an animal. And a lot of people sit back and say, well, we're scientific and we're knowledgeable and we believe in evolution. It's just the only rational way to go. Well, that may be, but let's compare what can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Under my notion of creationism, where you sit back and you say, this man is made in God's image, and therefore we can't murder him, we can't take his property, we have to give him certain rights. People have real rights under creationism.
Mm-hmm.
But under evolution, they don't. There are no significant rights worth mentioning. They don't have an obligation to secure our God-given unalienable rights. You're just livestock. And as much and as rational as some people might think they are, by espousing the evolutionary theory, the net result is those of you who advocate that are leaving your children without any meaningful rights. They have no more rights than a chicken in a Tyson poultry processing plant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? By their fruits, you shall know them. One theory gives us God-given unalienable rights. The other one lays the foundation for concentration camps and euthanasia.
Isn't it funny, too, how people cling to that idea? It's just the one idea that is so fundamental and, you know, foundational to their oppression. That they still cling to it.
You know? Yeah, they've been conditioned and they haven't been taught to see the difference. Incidentally, that theory of evolution pretty much burst on the scene about the same time the government declared the definition of food and the definition of drugs to be applicable to man or other animals.
Hmm.
It's not an accident. This is evidence from my perspective of spiritual war that's been going on for over a century without people realizing what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting, too, that so many people are fighting to return to the Republic and, you know, wanting to get our country back on track, but they don't know where to look. And this is where to look, ladies and gentlemen.
This is part of the, this is a big chunk of the equation.
Yeah.
This is a big piece of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So did we want to move on to notice now?
I would like to. I think that notices are something that everybody that I know, you know, deals with all the time. And if there are insights into that, you know, document that we don't know about, I think that's really important.
Here's what I've learned. I had to deal with some notices. And at first, the first time I did, I was dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, and they wanted to know, and this goes back to, oh, I'm trying to remember now, 1996 maybe, I don't recall. But in the 1990s.
Okay.
No, it was earlier than that. It was actually about 1992. The IRS contacted me and said, we haven't received your paperwork, you know, for the last year or two.
Right.
And I responded with a letter, a fairly lengthy letter, where I said, look, I don't know whether I have to pay income tax or I don't. I've seen a bunch of books that allege that I don't have to pay it. I don't really know. If you would let me talk to an agent.
Mm-hmm.
Who will tell me, all right, here's the reason why you have to pay income tax. This is the reason why these books are wrong. All right? I said, I'll publish everything you've got to say in my magazine. I was publishing the Andy Scheister at that time.
Right.
We guesstimated that we were reaching about 50,000 people per issue. I don't mean that we had 50,000 mag copies, but the typical magazine is read 3-5 times.
Mm-hmm.
So we send that out. We send out 10,000 copies. We thought we might reach 50,000. We said, look, if you will, you tell me why, I'll publish every bit of it in the magazine. I even offered to let them be on my radio program.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And we'll get that word out if that's the truth. But I said, I don't know. I didn't hear anything from him for a year and a half.
Okay.
And then somebody called me on the phone and said, when are you going to send your stuff in the Internal Revenue Service? I said, when are you going to answer my registered letter?
Mm-hmm.
He said, what registered letter? I said, I sent you a registered letter a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've never had a response. Well, I'll look in the file. I said, never heard another word.
Right.
Okay. Now, I didn't understand what I was doing, but I was responding to their notices essentially with questions.
Okay.
What I said was, look, I don't know what's going on here. Help me understand. I had another incident where I was threatened with being charged with unauthorized practice of law by the Dallas Bar Association on behalf of the Texas Bar Association. And this was back about 2000. And by then, I'd begun to get a handle on this business about notice and mm-hmm. responding with questions. And they came after me and threatened me with fines of $10,000 in a notice. And I responded with about 11 pages of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote back to me and said, dear Mr. Adisk, we don't have time to fence with you over all the issues that you're raising. We are sending your file down to the State Bar headquarters. And if you have any further questions, don't hesitate to ask.
That's nice of them.
I just posed 11 pages of questions.
Right.
And they didn't answer one of them. But they did close. If you have any further questions, don't hesitate to ask. It's always cracked me up. I thought it was funny.
I want to interject here, too, that the reason I think that was successful is because you skipped over three of the major time bombs or the major landmines that they leave out there for you. And your response being with questions eliminates you from argument with them. And if you argue with them, you're obviously going to lose. If you are silent, you're going to lose because it's the old adage, the first guy that leaves the battlefield loses, right? And then agreement with them, or in which case you've already lost because you said, yes, I did exactly do what you said I did. And you didn't do any of those things, which and I think those are really important to make sure that we mention to people that those are the things you want to avoid.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Here's what I've learned about notice. I've learned, and again, there's probably 20 or 30 articles on this concept that's on my blog, and you can scroll down the categories on the right-hand side, look for notice, click on it, you'll get more than you care to read. But get to the earliest documents, and they're the ones that'll show you where we first figured this out and began to understand it, and they probably have the best foundation for what we've come to understand.
Okay.
The law on notice is that a notice need not be complete. I can send you a notice, JD, that says, JD, when are you going to pay me that $500,000 you owe me?
Right.
Okay? That essentially says that. I'm misphrasing it because it sounds like I asked you a question. It has to be phrased as a statement. We're waiting on that $500,000.
Oh, okay.
All right. If you respond with statements and you say, Adisk, you crazy SOB, right? I don't owe you. I don't owe you $500,000, and you're a Satanist, and you're going to burn in hell. What? I will sit back and say thank you very much, because if you respond to a notice with statements, it is presumed that you have sufficient notice. And I'll explain that in a moment.
Okay.
Likewise, if I send you that notice and you make no response at all, your silence creates the presumption that you have sufficient notice.
Hmm.
The reason this is important is because notice is the first component of procedural due process. Procedural due process consists of notice and opportunity to be heard. When you go ahead, if I send you a notice, or let's say the IRS sends you a notice, and you respond with a statement, okay, they're going to, yes, they don't care what you say. Just give them a statement.
Right.
And they will say, you have sufficient notice, because the notice is incomplete. It doesn't give a complete list of all relevant facts and all relevant law. The law on notice, you just have to create a document that is sufficient to put the recipient on inquiry. I send you a notice. I say you owe me $500,000. Your proper response is to ask questions and essentially say, what the heck are you talking about, man?
Right.
Right? That's the proper response. If you make statements, you have sufficient notice. If you go silent, you have sufficient notice. Once you get sufficient notice, they can move on to the second part of procedural due process, which is opportunity to be heard. This is an administrative hearing where you will be found guilty about 98% of the time. You don't want the opportunity to be heard, or at least I don't.
Okay.
Right? And the way to control the opportunity to be heard is prevent the presumption that you have sufficient notice. How do you do it? You ask questions. That's all. Okay. And one of the great things about this strategy is, so far as I'm able to understand, it doesn't get you in any more trouble.
Right.
There's a lot of people that have a strategy and do this, do that, and the other thing, and you may wind up in jail if you don't know what you're doing. All I'm doing is asking questions. And at the bottom of most notices that you receive from the IRS or from other government agencies or utility companies or whatever, down at the bottom there's going to be a 1-800 number, at least in most instances, where it says, if you have any questions, please call us at so-and-so.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I don't want to do that.
Don't
Why
do
not?
That. Because they're going to record your voice, and then they create joinder between your physical body and the agents of the corporation that you represent on paper.
I think the reason you don't want it is because it doesn't create evidence.
Mm.
You can sit back and say, I talked to somebody on the telephone, and if you can even find that guy later on, they said, oh, no, I never agreed to that. I never said that. Right. You say you said one thing. He said, no, he didn't. All right. You're not creating evidence. But if you send when you talk on the phone, but if I won't say that you don't create any evidence, but it's certainly debatable who said what, who meant what.
Right.
But if you send paperwork by registered mail, you are creating evidence. I'm sending my questions to whoever it has sent me the notice by registered mail, and all my questions are, did such and such happen, yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
Did you understand this to be true, yes or no? Everything is yes or no. I don't do any fill in the blank or the rest of that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yes or no. I make it as simple as humanly possible.
Do you notarize your questions when you send
them? No, I haven't.
No,
I don't believe I have. I can't think of any time when I've done that. I can't say that it would hurt, but it hasn't been necessary. When they send me a notice, they create that notice because it's incomplete. It creates my right of inquiry.
Right.
All right? My right of inquiry presupposes their duty to answer my questions. If I have the right to ask questions, somebody's got to have a correlative duty to answer.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can ask some good questions, if you can ask some questions that they don't want to answer or they can't answer, then you are being denied procedural due process. And they can't take you to the opportunity to be heard where you will be found guilty about 98% of the time.
Wow.
Well, that's been our experience,
mm-hmm.
right? I can't tell you it's God's truth, but I'll bet I've been promoting that idea 5-6 years now.
I bet it's closer to God's truth than this man or other animals agenda that they're promoting.
It's man or other, yeah, that's the truth.
Right?
Yeah, that absolutely.
Could you give us just a general kind of outline of some of the questions that you would respond to a notice with?
I'm going to talk to him about venue. I'm
okay.
going to talk to him about whether or not, do you understand, for example, you're sensitive to the idea that the all uppercase name probably identifies an entity other than yourself.
It's at the baseline level, the most that we know about that for sure, it is a title. It is presumed as a title, and they presume that it is you when you go into a courtroom, but it is...
No, they don't presume that it's you. I disagree with that.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. There's people that go into court and they say, I'm not a fiction.
Right.
All right? That's the name of a fiction. I'm not a fiction. And the judge essentially, in my opinion, says, well, duh, how stupid do you think I am? You think I can't tell that you're not a fiction?
Right.
He knows you're not a fiction, but he presumes that you represent the fiction.
Correct.
Fiction cannot appear unless some living man or woman represents the fiction.
Right.
They bring the fiction into court, and you stand up and answer for it and respond for it and the rest of that sort of thing. The fiction has now appeared in court, and the fiction has no meaningful rights.
Right.
All right?
Wow.
They get you to represent the fiction. Then they say, why don't you hire an attorney? And you say, yes, I'm going to go hire the attorney. And you get this guy, Attorney Smith, and he comes in, and you think he's representing you.
Oh, officer of
you're
the court.
You're not hiring him to represent you. You're hiring him to represent it.
Yes.
And there's a point in the, I suspect, at the time when the court asks, do you understand the charges against you? And you say yes.
Bad move.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's at that point, and I can't prove it, but I think it's at that point that you have agreed
yes.
to be the surety, not just a representative, not just the fiduciary for the fiction, not just a representative, but the surety for the fiction. And you're essentially saying, if you find it guilty, I will pay the penalty.
And you're saying, by when you say, I understand, you're saying, I stand under what it is that you are saying right now.
I think you're saying, I consent to, I agree
right.
to. I think
right.
that's what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done is when I sign my name, I don't argue that I'm not the fiction. I argue that the all uppercase name is my alias.
Yeah.
My proper name is Alfred Adisk, capitalized. First letter of each word is uppercase. The rest of them are lowercase.
Mm-hmm.
I claim that the all uppercase name is merely my alias. It's not my true proper name. It's not proper name at law, but just the same. People call me that. That's my contention. And I do that because if a case goes to court, and I claim that the all uppercase is my alias, they either have to agree it's my alias or they have to stand up in court and admit in front of a jury that that's not your name. That's not your alias. That's the name of a legal fiction that you represent.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as they say that in front of a jury, I'm going to invite the jury to take a look at your driver's license,
yes.
take a look at your bank cards,
mm-hmm.
take a look at all your documents that are in the all uppercase name, because they're going to have to admit that it's not your bank account. It's not your money. It's not in your name. It's the name of the fiction. That driver's license isn't your driver's license. It's the name of a fiction. They can't make these admissions in court. And I'll guarantee you that if I pulled out a driver's license, I don't actually have a current driver's license, but if I pulled one out and I handed it to the jury and I said, is that my name? And it'll be all uppercase name. And it'll have my little photo next to it and rest of that sort of thing, maybe my signature. And I say, is that my name? And they're going to say, well, yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor's going to have to say, no, it's not. And then the jury looks at their own driver's license and say, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, and then you're at the edge of the rabbit hole. I mean, that is like the big – when I discovered the idea of the straw man and the fact that they had to create, you know, for us an agent so that we could all act in commerce, boy, the power that comes with that knowledge was – I've never experienced anything like that.
You know who started that idea?
No, uh-uh.
It was me. One other guy did the same thing at the same time. I started it, and I called the uppercase name. I refer to it as my evil twin.
Right.
I picked up on that and started advancing back in the early 1990s. I don't know. It'd be around 1994, somewhere in there. And at the same time, another guy that I know, and I can't think of his name right this minute. I should be able to. He wrote one article on the same. He'd stumbled into the same idea, and he entitled his article, It Ain't Me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he argued that the all uppercase name isn't him, which is true.
Yeah.
I'm arguing that it's just an alias for me, and I'm a man.
Mm-hmm.
That means this all uppercase name is the name of a living man endowed by his creator with certain unalienable rights. We don't have a fiction. If it's only an alias, there's no fiction. And the jury will agree. They'll look at the paperwork and say, well, yeah, that's his name, all uppercase name.
So how do you respond then to a notice that comes in that all upper name? I mean,
well, I respond to him. I say, do you understand? One of my questions will be, do you understand that the all uppercase name, Alfred N. Adisk, is merely an alias for my proper name, mm-hmm. Alfred Adisk? Do you, yes or no? Do you understand that Alfred Adisk is the proper name of a man made in God's image?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no? Do you understand that Alfred Adisk is the name for a man endowed by his creator with certain unalienable rights? Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me. Just give me an answer. I don't care what answer they give me. One of the interesting things about this notice concept, that because they don't give you full information, you are entitled to ask questions. How are they going to provide you with answers to your questions?
I don't know.
They're going to send you a notice.
Right.
Which means their notice creates your right again to ask more questions.
So you essentially trap them in this situation where you just continue to ask them to clarify forever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to ask you a question. As soon as you send me notice of your answer, I have more questions.
Right.
And I'm willing to bet that I have more questions than you have answers.
Well, and I love that technique because especially when you're dealing with like bill collectors and stuff, you know, there are millions of people out there that will never give any of this a second thought. They're going to get a notice, say, oh, you owe $200 to AT&T from 5 years ago. Great. Yep. Write you a check. Off it goes. But if you put a knife in your teeth and you run right at these people, it will become, you know, they have cost benefit analysis departments also, guys. So when they have to look and say, okay, we're going to spend $600 a minute or $600 an hour on 10 lawyers to fight this guy, for a $2,000 bill, they're not going to do that. That's they're going to turn up their hands and just say, you know what, we're writing this one off.
They're running a business. This is not about law. This is not about justice. This is profit and loss.
Wow.
And if you become, if it costs them more to get at you than they stand to make, you're like one of these card counters in Las Vegas.
Exactly.
They politely invite you to please get the heck out of our casino. We don't want your business. That's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Alfred, this has been a fantastic phone call. I love this interview. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Is there anything else that you want to relay to the listeners as an ending here?
Well, once you get into this, some of it is not merely difficult to understand in the sense of being able to comprehend. Mm-hmm. Some of it is absolutely hard to believe. You really do stumble into circumstances and you begin to understand, you know, that movie, The Matrix, everybody's seen, everybody understands. That is not so far removed from what's really going on.
It's almost exactly what's going on.
They have created an alternative reality for us. And if you don't understand that they presume that you voluntarily walked into that alternative reality, you got nothing. You're going to be chopped up into hamburger by the system. They'll grind you up like a meat grinder. But if you can see this alternative reality, if you can sense it, and you have some questions that you can ask about it, say, well, what about this? What about that? All of a sudden, they just say, get out of here. Now, it's not a guarantee. You know, if they really, really want you, there's nothing you're going to do to stop them.
Right.
Right. That's the truth of the matter. But if they're not really particular and you're just another, you know, another one of the sheep in the pen from their perspective, if you become too uppity, they just say, get him out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's not to put you in prison. It's to put you someplace. Just don't bother us anymore. We got sheepish gear.
Well, their biggest fear is you creating a precedent for others to follow, you know. Because that's the key to the Matrix right there is you wake people up and you show them that there's pretty simple reasons why we're in the mess that we're in. And all of a sudden, you get all of these people that want to do the same thing. That's a world I'd like to be a part of. So I'm really glad that you joined us today. I hope you can come back in the future. But it's been absolutely my pleasure to get to speak with you today, Alfred.
I had a good time, JD. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about these things and look forward to another visit. One of these
Me too. The website, again, ladies and gentlemen, is adask.wordpress.com. Go there, support Mr. Alfred Adask and everything that he is doing, and get yourself educated on this crazy system that we're in, because there is remedy, you guys. There is the ability to get out from under this. Join us tomorrow. Cherie and Chris Geo will be on the program at 11 o'clock, and we'll be talking about Truth Frequency Radio and plans for the future and things like that. Really appreciate you guys all sticking with us today. This has been your Daily Dose of Deep Programming. My name has been JD and will be JD again tomorrow. You guys take care. We'll see you later.
You make a great team. It's been that way since the day you met. But your erectile dysfunction? It could be a question of blood flow. Sometimes when a politician has been in D.C. too long, it goes to his head and he just can't seem to get the job done. Used on a daily basis, WinnerEgg in Congress will help you every time the moment is right to have your voice heard at the federal level. When using WinnerEgg, it's important to note that the borders will be secured, Second Amendment rights protected, Obamacare and Planned Parenthood will be defunded, and common sense will be used in solving the nation's problems. Other signs of erectile dysfunction may include extreme skin discoloration, the inability to punch oneself out of a wet paper bag,
or maintain a spine in the face of liberal opposition,
amore de gramine verde, smoking,
and golf. If you have a boner lasting longer than 23 years, seek immediate medical attention. WinnerEgg. Because Boehner shouldn't count his chickens before they hatch.
It's Boehner.
I'm J.D. WinnerEgg, and I approve this message.